Straight Talk on WRHI is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, for another edition of our Straight Talk program, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks this afternoon to our co-sponsor, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Piedmont Medical Center is with us, a community built on care. Find out more online at piedmontmedicalcenter.com. And we're very pleased to have with us State Representative and House Majority Leader, Gary Simrell, who is fresh back up from the hospital bed, from the, what would we call it? You are now out of...
I was convalescing.
You were convalescing. And I think that's a good way to start this. You know, we had York County Councilman Bump Roddy on here a week or so ago talking about his experience with COVID. And here's another one. You got it. Did you figure out how you got it?
I do not. I've looked at every way possible. The thing that I did do once I realized, and I had been tested prior, by the way, just to make sure, and I tested negative. I would rather have COVID than give COVID. And so what I did do, I quarantined quickly when I found out. I called every person that I had been in contact with in Columbia, because I had been in Columbia. I don't think I contracted it in Columbia. Fortunately, nobody, including my family members that I had been around, contracted COVID. So we're very fortunate. I'm also very fortunate, although I was sick, certainly did not have to go to the hospital, was not on oxygen. Well, unfortunately, I did develop pneumonia as I was recovering from COVID, so that prolonged, you know, me being back to normal, unfortunately, but glad to have been through it. Again, I tell people that the masking works. I wore a mask when I was in Columbia as I was around people, and nobody that was around me contracted COVID.
Shoot. Did you ever get scared while this thing was going on?
No, I'm not. I didn't get scared as it was happening. I knew as more and more people contracted it, your chances obviously increased. I looked at all my lipids, my vitals, and figured, you know, if I did get it, it wouldn't be bad. I was wrong. It was bad. But again, I consider myself one of the fortunate ones, especially if you listen to the story of Bump Roddy and what he went through. Just terrible. Certainly, he was in my prayers during that time, and I'm glad he's recovering.
Yeah. All right, enough with the COVID. Glad to see you back up on your feet and just in time to get started with yet another legislative session. How many years you've been down there now?
Well, exactly this would be my 29th year.
29 years. Wow. So you've been House Majority Leader for 4 years. Is this something that is voted upon every 2 years?
So the leadership of the House Caucus, Majority Leader, is voted on by the Republican Caucus. Our rules state that you can only serve two terms. Each term is 2 years, so that's a four-year term limit. In this particular instance, I will be entering my fifth year as Majority Leader, and so the caucus decided to suspend the rules and allow me to serve a third term, somewhat unprecedented. I don't take that as credit necessarily for me, but as we go into this year with the budget the way it is, with redistricting on the table, with COVID-19 and what we face with that, I think many of the members of the caucus thought a steady hand at the wheel during this time was better than a new person coming in, and I was willing to serve.
So one more year or two more years?
The term is for 2 years.
2 years, all right. Makes good sense to me, I understand. With that being said, it's interesting that we've been operating under, what do you call it, a continuing budget?
Continuing resolution, right? That's correct.
So we're basically operating on the same budget we had the last fiscal year. Now, that... are you going to be making any adjustments to that midterm, or do you think you're just going to keep on that road?
We're going to continue with the continuing resolution until the new budget is put in place. Interestingly enough, the budget retreat for the sub-chairs of the budget, we're planning to meet in Rock Hill this year, as a matter of fact, on the 7th and the 8th. As you realize, we are the 7th and the 8th is upon us, but due to COVID-19, We decided to forego that just to keep all the staff members and other members safe. We will be starting the hearing process. As a matter of fact, I was in Columbia yesterday with higher education, beginning the process of hearings for the 2021-2022 budget. So we plan on passing a budget this year, in March of this year, over to the Senate in July 1, the beginning of the new fiscal year for South Carolina. We will have a budget in place, and of course we'll be operating under that continued resolution, as we say CR, during that interim. Also knowing, Manning, that CARES Act dollars have been coming in as we speak. The governor, obviously, through his process with the CARES Act and with South Carolina business leaders, has been putting plans together as well.
So the first thing I guess you have to do with your budget is try to figure out how much money you're going to have. So the Bureau of Economic Advisors?
The BEA, yeah. Board of Economic Advisors, actually, they continually look at the numbers. And realizing in South Carolina, kind of as at the beginning of this, that, and I've heard you say this word, a three-legged stool. In South Carolina, we really have a two-legged stool. And the two-legged stool is income tax and sales tax. That makes up well over four-fifths of the dollars that come into South Carolina. And so as we look at COVID-19 and look at tourism industry, sales around the state, obviously they've taken a hit. So that becomes obviously a detriment to the coffers of South Carolina, as does employment, with the loss of employment that we've seen in South Carolina. That being said, looking back to the budget that we passed just this past March of 2020, we had more dollars, new dollars, that had come into South Carolina than we had ever had. It was a remarkable year. Unfortunately, that near $2 billion in revenue has been cut down by well over half. And so as we enter the 2021-2022 budget year, obviously we start from a completely different aspect. What we're hoping is that with 21, we will start seeing improvements in the budget. South Carolina has actually fared well than many other states around us, so that's good. But it was because we were in a good position. The other thing that we had done in looking forward was in 2020, we set aside more dollars for reserves than we had in the history of South Carolina. That actually has been a saving grace for us.
Well, I'm glad to hear you've done that. So you really don't, I guess you don't have a real firm handle as to what 21-22 is going to look like. Are you going to try to do it from a revenue neutral standpoint and just see what happens?
It's not necessarily revenue neutral. What we're looking at is what are the demands that we face now, what are the requirements for dollars, and where we are. That number, fortunately, is available. What changes is what we can do, giving pay raises to teachers as an example, giving pay raises to employees, looking at the areas of the budget that have taken the most increases to maintain health care. Where do we go with that? We talk about higher education and the affordability of higher education. We were on a pathway of tuition mitigation, of capital improvements for higher education in South Carolina. Where do we go in 2021-2022 to mitigate some of that? Because everything is a domino when it comes to a family's budget and how they prepare to spend. We face the same in Columbia. The difference is someone will sell, we're on a fixed income. Well, when you're relying on sales tax, and that's property tax. Property tax is a fixed income. When you're relying on sales tax and income tax, it is very fluid. And so those are the areas we have to look at.
So in terms of the teachers, you were on it. You had, before the virus hit, you had a multiple-year plan to keep bumping them up. You had to scrap it this current budget year. Because you didn't have what's your revenue?
Well, we
picture?
Didn't have a budget, number one.
Right.
And number two, we didn't have the revenue coming in even post-budget. Of course, that's one of the things we're looking at now. I think one of the key aspects is that we maintain. So we're not having to lay off people. I mean, look at many businesses around here. Unfortunately, if you start looking at unemployment in that, I mean, we had over $1 billion in reserves in unemployment. That dwindled extremely quickly. You know, fortunately, the federal government end of that kicked in. The CARES Act dollars kicked in. We passed resolutions that funneled money back into unemployment to keep people solvent during this time. And so I always, there are two categories. One is if you lost your job, there is an avenue for you to maintain some income. If you have a job, for you to be able to keep that job and not lose it. And so I always say at this point, we're not trying to go faster in the boat. We're trying to keep from sinking. And so that's where we find ourselves. And unfortunately, those are hard conversations, but they're real conversations. And we're asking for people to understand that we're doing everything we can from a budgetary standpoint to keep South Carolina afloat, but it's all hands on deck. It's general quarters to make sure this happens.
Shoo, boy, it's going to be tough year.
Tough year.
It's going to be a real tough year. On a brighter note, you were very involved years ago, I guess, what's it now, 3, 4, 5 years ago, in finding a solution to the Department of Transportation's revenue issues. Didn't have enough money to do the kind of work that needed to be done, bridges, roads, whatever. I'm now in the third year of this, every year 2 pennies more on the gas tax.
Actually, July 1st of 2017 was the first year. So as we're going in, this is our fourth year.
Fourth year. So what's the report card? Do you think it's working?
Yes, it is working. The proof is in the construction that you see and the repaving that you see. If you'll remember back when this began, because we had lost so many businesses that were either in the asphalt, bridge building, concrete, to other states that had put their plans ahead of us, Georgia, North Carolina come to mind, of course, we had to rebuild the employer-employee base for those type companies. So we began with what was called the Rural Safety Plan, which made roadways safer by putting the rub strips down, by putting the lighted reflectors down the road, more reflective paint, those things that were kind of shovel ready, if you will. But the process began statewide to improve roads. That has happened. Unfortunately, if you go to 2020 and COVID-19 beginning in around March, and you entered that second quarter, the fiscal quarter of that year, road travel dropped, and so revenues that came into DOT dropped by some 30 or 40%. Well, if you look at the Infrastructure Bank Board, which also bonds money to serve as a catalyst for projects, I-77, yeah, the interchanges, all of a sudden we found ourselves in a lurch, because if you go to get a loan somewhere and you don't have revenue coming in, those that are supplying the money through the loan look at you with a little chagrin. So we found ourselves there. So we've had to divide that part up. So while DOT reform and funding is absolutely working, it's been stymied to a degree by COVID-19. Hopefully we start coming through that beginning in 2021. Once the vaccine is more readily available and is happening, people will feel more comfortable in coming out, and I think that will be a bolster to our economy, which, again, the ripple effect of that through retail sales, through employment, and through road construction, that they all tie together.
This may not be your purview, but let's just take a little sidebar and talk about this vaccination program. Federal government's done a great job getting all the vaccine developed and out to the states. The states universally have had issues in terms of how we get this stuff out, and it's slowed down. And I know the governor just, I guess this week, was trying to call all hands on deck with DHEC, saying, what are we going to do? What's the plan? What's going on? Do you all get involved with that?
Yes, and frustrating is the key word, and very unfortunate. Again, you want to make sure that as these vaccines come in, that frontline workers, those that are you know, making sure that people are healthy and well, are first in line. Then those that are elderly are in this top echelon of who gets this vaccine, and you roll through that. The problem is, it looks like we've hit roadblocks in this, especially in the upstate of South Carolina and York County, and it's been very unfortunate. I personally have been in touch with Department of Health and Environmental Control, the governor's office, Rick Lee, who I will applaud, who is actually a commissioner on the DHEC board. He has responded quickly and astoundingly in making sure that the vaccines are it is happening in the best manner we can. Piedmont now is going outside of their walls with administering this. The governor has actually tapped the National Guard to help with this. So while it has been extremely frustrating and disheartening, because people's lives are at stake, you know, this isn't just some policy, this is real. And so that frustration has led to a firing up of this system to make sure that South Carolina can get these vaccines to the people that need it in a post-haste fashion.
I read an article here the other day on this topic that talked about another one of the issues. Nurses who normally administer this, they've been so sick because of the COVID themselves being on the front lines that there's fewer people to administer the shots. So they were suggesting, why not get other medical people, maybe the dental offices, get them involved with this thing, or whoever, to get more hands. We got the vaccine, we just got to get people to administer it.
So working through that, working with hospitals, I was on a conference call with DHEC about the administration of, or the administering of the COVID-19 vaccine. It is happening, but I can just tell you, unacceptable in the way it began to roll out in South Carolina for York County. We are correcting that now.
What's interesting to me is whatever the general's name was in Washington that did all this, these logistics and getting this stuff out, is that where the disconnect was between the Fed and the states individually?
I think it was a series of errors, but I think that the trying to make, or in the quest to ensure that the vaccine made it to frontline workers first, which was important,
sure,
stymied the next rollout, because it looked as if, and again, this is somewhat from the outside looking in, but it looked as if that held up the second and the third phase of how it should have happened. And I think really it could have all happened simultaneously. That was a failure. I think you've seen the governor's frustration with that failure, and it is now being rectified. Again, I always say this is bigger than policy, because this is people's lives we're talking about.
And I will tell you that we've made arrangements to have Dr. Traxler on Palmetto Mornings, I forgot, next Monday or Tuesday, with Patty Mercer and Lucas McFadden. So that whole interview is going to be about what's happening, what are we doing, where can we go, that kind of thing. I got to ask you one more question before we take the break. Back to Rhodes. You all were very successful in finally getting money out of the State Infrastructure Bank to do these intersections, but it was not as much as was originally requested. Do you expect there'll be more to finish up all of the intersections?
Yes, and that goes back to what we talked about earlier, and that was the reduction in tax receipts, fuel tax receipts for South Carolina. So while you had three big projects for York County, we funded two of them, and that was Exit 85 and that was Exit 82. 90, which is the Carowinds Boulevard exit, was part of that original plan. It was jettisoned, really delayed. I hate to use the word jettison. It was delayed. Exit 88, of course, was a pennies project. So those four projects, 88 is in the works. 85 and 82 are SIB projects, State Infrastructure Bank projects. Exit 90 was the delay.
All right, we're going to go ahead and take our mid-program break. Remind you that you are listening to Straight Talk live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Good Pharmacy is with us, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road to Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. And as everybody knows, we hang out here every day at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Fresh subs and salads prepared right before your eyes 7 days a week. The magical way we do it is the count of three. One, two, three. Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden. Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI.
Hey, Manning, I hear the gyros are back at Substation 2.
That's right, Alex, and they are great. They're made to order, served hot, on warm, soft pita bread with creamy tzatziki sauce, onion, and tomato. And I can't wait to get one.
Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Want it? Buy it with a credit card from Founders Federal Credit Union. With low rates, no annual fee, and various card options, you can't go wrong. And keeping up with your card activity has never been easier. Simply open Founders online or the Founders app. Visit foundersfcu.com/visa for more information and to apply for a Founders credit card today. Not a Founders member? Visit Relax, joinfounders.com to see if you qualify for membership. Terms and conditions apply. Founders Federal Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA.
This is Dr. Karen Jenkins, emergency room director at Piedmont Medical Center. When someone is experiencing a life-threatening emergency, such as a stroke or a heart attack, every second counts. Piedmont Medical Center's emergency departments in Rock Hill and on Gold Hill Road in Fort Mill are open 24/7 to treat life's unexpected emergencies. Even in the middle of a pandemic, our commitment to providing safe, high-quality emergency medical care in our community remains strong. Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care.
Our common sense investing is not designed to take your life savings, roll the dice, and make you rich. We design a plan to keep the standard of living you have grown accustomed to the same throughout your retirement, be it 20, 30, or even 40 more years. Anderson Griggs Investments, 324-5044, or online at andersongriggs.com.
Comporium's Cloud Voice Services delivers carrier-class cloud PBX and hosted business phone services with all the features expected from a traditional phone system, plus unified communications, instant messaging, mobile apps, video conferencing, and more. Business Cloud Voice takes away all the guesswork by offering a cost-effective pay-as-you-grow service. It doesn't skimp on quality or features, it won't hurt the bottom line, and it will continue to deliver innovative services year after year. Learn more online at business.comporium.com.
This is Charlie Ruffalo. I want to personally thank everyone for supporting Substation 2 during this pandemic. This has not been an easy time for many of us, but you keep coming back day after day for our fresh subs and salads, and that has helped us keep the doors open and our employees on the payroll. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Rock Hill and York County, for supporting Substation 2 these past 34 years, and especially now. Substation 2 really loves you. Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, State Representative Gary Simrell, who continues in his role as the House Majority Leader. Sounds great, but as he says, the workload is tremendous. All right. I wanted to get back. Well, a big issue that I don't think anybody really is talking about. We've just gotten finished with the census, the 2020 census. South Carolina grew. Does that surprise you? Not at all.
Everybody loves South Carolina.
Everybody loves South Carolina. Just on a broad scope, do you think we're going to pick up any congressional seats at all? I mean, in the House?
I don't think we'll pick up a congressional seat. Certainly you will see movement around the states from the legislative standpoint, both in the Senate and the House. Again, you know, we're constitutionally at 46 Senate seats, one for each county originally. Obviously that the way the maps look doesn't exactly exhibit that. And then 124 House seats. But if you go back to 2010, of course, Ray Felder's seat, that District 26, yeah. You know, that was a new seat. If you look in that same area, Fort Mill, Indian Land, the 521 corridor coming out of Ballantyne, Brandon Newton's seat as an example, each House seat now has about a little over 40,000 people, on average about 25,000 registered voters. Brandon Newton's seat has over 40,000 registered voters.
Oh.
So that area has just grown. I mean it's hard to really imagine that type growth. So as we start looking at, it's a waterbed basically, as you start looking at the state, there'll be some push down on some and a raise in the other, because you have to stick with 124 at the end of the day with 5.1 plus million people divided by 124. That's the number geographically that you have to have. And so, you know, the state will have to be divided for that equal representation beginning in the elections of 2022.
So what about a Senate seat? Do you think we're
well, do the numbers. Do yeah. the numbers. And so if you look at that, certainly for York County to have two resident Senate seats, is we're right there. Ironically, if you look at York County, although District 16 is considered to be the Lancaster seat, the senator lives in York County, as does the resident senator, Wes Clymer, lives in York County. So from a technical standpoint, you've already got two resident York County senators, with the exception that one actually is the Lancaster senator.
And this, and you're talking about Michael Johnson's seat, and this is, I think, the first time that really the person holding that seat wasn't from Lancaster County.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So the process, this is what really is interesting. How's it start? Did the demographers start giving you ideas as to what it should look like?
Well, again, so take the population, yeah, divide that by 124. That's your magic number per district. Then look at each of the 124 districts and say, District 46 that I represent, what is that number? You know, District 49 that John King represents, what is that number? District 47 that Tommy Pope represents, what is that number? And so those lines have to be able to move, but there are also census tracts, there are neighborhoods, and so you start looking at all those aspects of what makes up these districts.
And then the Senate side, we have, what, 46?
46, and again, same deal. Divide 5.1 plus million divided by 46.
My goodness gracious, wow. All right, well, there's a few issues that keep hanging on. We haven't got a whole lot of time. Santee Cooper, what do you think is going to happen with that?
The House has a committee formed, which we did last year as well. Unfortunately, COVID became an issue with Santee Cooper because the House has actually passed resolutions dealing with Santee Cooper. I think this year is different in the sense that Senate leadership and House leadership are on the same page that Santee Cooper has to be dealt with in 2021. The sale of Santee Cooper is probably the number one choice at this point. Whether that can happen becomes a political question. If not, it must be reformed in a major way, and that is that the current makeup of leadership within Santee Cooper cannot continue.
Do you really think, based on the history of Santee Cooper, that that kind of reform could be done so that we keep this thing?
Possibly. Again, there are too many unanswered questions at this point, but I think that the goal right now with Santee Cooper and the House of Representatives and the Senate is that Santee Cooper would be sold.
Yeah. Well, you've gotten rid of a part of the debt by selling, I've forgotten how all this works, I mixed the names up, but Dominion came into play. They bought out whatever, and that took care of about half of the debt load that was required on this. There was like $9 billion or something like that.
It was a chunk, yes.
A chunk. So the state, I guess, ultimately is still responsible for the remaining debt through Santee Cooper.
Right. And again, historically, if you look at when Santee Cooper came in the 30s, right after the Great Depression, it was a positive thing. Unfortunately, Santee Cooper over time outgrew that. And now has become, unfortunately, an albatross. And it really goes back to the management of Santee Cooper. But 2021, Santee Cooper will be dealt with.
You heard it here, right on Straight Talk. Anything else that's on your plate as if you don't have enough?
Well, we talk about the budget. We obviously go into that. Redistricting is big.
Right.
And then, of course, Santee Cooper is part of that. Really, how we move forward during COVID with the session. We're creating more space within the chamber to make sure that we can meet. I mean, one of the things you don't want to have happen is a legislature that meets virtually where citizens can't be involved.
Right.
The transparency aspect of what we do must continue.
State Representative Gary Simrell, thank you for everything that you continue to do down there. Good work. Pleased to have you on the show today. I'm glad to see you're healthy. Get back up there and fight the good fight. And that's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Of course, we're here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, fresh subs and salads 7 days a week, prepared right before your eyes. The magical formula continues to be in place. It has not changed. And it is 1, 2, 3.
Slice, slice, slice.
Garden, 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 garden.
Have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you on the radio Monday. Bye.